Test 1, 2. Do a test for me.
Test 1, 2. Test. All right. 1, 2.
Good job. Well, hello out there, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I got a big voice today. Pretty good-sized gentleman. Matt Gilbreth, known as Gilly. Welcome, Gilly.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Now, Matt, he's the account executive for Delta Defense. He's service provider for the USCCA, which is United States Concealed Carry Association. Correct, Matt?
That's what I do.
And that's what you do. and we met because not recently, a couple months ago, Brenda and I and my son Michael all took a concealed carry class. And so you were there, and I met you, and I go, hey, I got to have you on the show. We got to talk about some concealed carry stuff.
You either liked what I had to say, or you were desperate for guests, or both.
No, I got plenty of guests. So you are a business consultant for the USCCA, correct?
Yeah, so just so everybody knows, Delta Defense is the service provider for the United States Concealed Carry Association. So basically, I work for Delta Defense, the outward organization, or the outward customer-facing images are all USCCA. So I get to, as an instructor, I get to work with all the instructors in the gun stores in the area to help them. I mean, it's kind of a rough time to be in the gun business and the firearms industry in general. There's a lot of attacks, both politically and legislatively, and just...
Seems like they're always wanting to take out that Second Amendment, aren't they? You know, or do something to it.
I'm a big fan of the First Amendment, and I'm a big fan of the Constitution, but I believe that the Second Amendment allows the other amendments to stay in place.
Well, it did.
Yeah.
You know, it does, and it did. So, concealed carry.
Yeah.
Okay. Who gets concealed carry license besides guys like me?
It is an ever-changing world, and that's one of the greatest things about my business and what I get to do. I get to help civilians or people who are now civilians, whether they're novices and never touched a gun, or they're people who grew up around guns, whether agricultural, hunting, farming, or worked full-time in some type of aspect where they had a gun and now their life is changing. And then the other big demographic that's changing right now is people that grew up hating guns, not wanting guns. Guns are bad. And now it's, you know, I think we can agree that the crime statistics in the world is a little bit different than it was 5 to 10 years ago, even 20 years ago. And so a lot of people that thought guns were bad or are still kind of don't know about guns are starting to question themselves and get some really good education instead of just taking somebody's opinion on social media.
Yes. So all kinds of people now are getting their license to carry.
If you look at the numbers, one of the largest growing demographics in America is black women. At a large percentage are one of the largest growing percentages of growing gun owners and concealed carry owners now. And the other one that's staggering as far as climbing is people in the LGBTQI communities are growing as big numbers as far as gun owners and as concealed carry owners. So it's good to see people that are statistically more likely to be attacked than, say, you or me, actually coming up with a plan and figuring out, hey, maybe there's a different way. Maybe I need to make a life change.
What's the typical cost of a concealed carry class?
In this area of Illinois, for the 16-hour class, you're looking around $150 to $200. Anything less than that, I'd kind of be wary of. Anything highly greater than that, I'd kind of be wary of. But that $150 to $200 range for that 16-hour class is probably pretty reasonable.
Okay. How about, you know, the procedure to get a concealed carry? Is there a lot of opportunities around for that?
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's not as many as there used to be for lots of reasons. You know, we met at Mark's class in Trigger Talent, and I work with him as a business partner. And you got guys like him, and you got other area people, you know, Alton and in the metro east of St. Louis. But there's not as many as there used to be for two reasons. One of which is the people that were just getting it for the wrong reasons kind of took themselves out of it, either because of regulation or just because They weren't sustainable. Gotcha. You know, as an instructor,
you got some paperwork to keep.
Yeah, as an instructor,
you got some rules. You got to go by the rules and guidelines.
A lot of them wanted to cut corners, and the state police audits the classes and make sure that 16 hours is 16 hours. You don't get in trouble for going 16 hours and 10 minutes, but you can get in trouble for going 15 hours and 50 minutes. And I'm okay with that. If we're going to have standards, let's hold them. You got to go to a licensed instructor for the state of Illinois. If you have no military or law enforcement background, you got to go to the full 16-hour class. And when you're done there, you still have to upload and pay the state police a fee. It's $150 for 5 years. And then in 5 years, you have to go back to another instructor, the same one, if you liked them.
Every
5 years, and talk about any laws that have changed or just refresh on the laws, and you have to requalify on both of those. And so the qualifications aren't hard. They're not terrible difficult. But, you know, I tell people the biggest thing that people don't realize is they don't have to have a FOID card to go to class, and they don't have to own a gun. And I tell most people that have zero experience or very little experience, or, you know, you look at people a little bit older than us, and, you know, they have experience from firearms when they're younger and they haven't touched a gun in 40, 50 years. I'm like, don't go buy a gun just to go to class. One of the things that's discussed in class is which gun is best for you.
Exactly. Yes. And that was done exclusively. Now, FOID card.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people, like you say, they think, you know, FOID card, what's the difference between FOID and concealed? But actually, which I learned in class is, in your place of business, you can carry a gun and you can conceal it, correct?
Yeah. So Illinois has, everybody thinks the gun laws in Illinois are crazy.
Home.
Yeah. But Illinois doesn't have the craziest gun laws. In fact, there's 5 or 6 states that make us look pretty easy. But as long as you're an Illinois resident that has a FOID card, you can carry on your personal property in your place of business, whether you own the business or not, if you have permission from the business owner.
So you can be an employee at a business.
Yeah. If I owned a business and I liked you and knew that you were a responsible gun owner, I could give you permission to represent me when I'm there or not there in the acts of defending the business and the lives of people in there. Again, going back to that Second Amendment right of being able to defend yourself. And it's not the government's job to defend me. It's the government's job to defend my right to defend myself how I see fit and reasonable.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. On your property, on personal property that you give them permission, a lot of those gun rights don't need a concealed carry license. The problem comes into, let's just say you own a business and it's on the other side of town from your house. Are you going to have multiple guns, or how are you illegally going to get that gun from point A to point B?
Couldn't you unload it and carry it in and then load it back up?
Yeah, that's why I say you could put it in transport mode.
Yeah.
And that becomes a little bit more of a burden sometimes than just being able to legally just keep it on your person and take it. There's nothing wrong with transport mode. It's a constitutionally protected thing that we got to keep, but that concealed carry license, doing the training, getting the permit, doing all that is one less headache that you have to deal with. And it also allows you more opportunities to be able to more rapidly defend yourself. God forbid you're ever in a situation like that.
Yeah. One thing I found out at the class that I was in, that actually a switchblade, which I happen to have a switchblade, just as a collector, you know, I just bought a few of them and gave them away and kept one for myself. But I just thought they were cool, you know.
They are.
And but you can actually, if you have a FOID card, you can carry a switchblade.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a FOID card, you can't.
And again, I'm not a huge fan of the FOID card in general, the firearms owner's identification card. But I also think if I ever ran for governor, which is not going to happen, but one of the things I would look at is, let's not get rid of the FOID card, but let's make it like an exclusive membership. Like, instead of having to wait 72 hours, you wait 24 hours to pick up your gun or those kind of things. And the reason they're making those rules with the switchblade is, if you possess a FOID card, you're saying that you're somebody who's gone through an extensive background check. You're not somebody who has a litany of charges pending. You're not
true.
And so, you know, on the face value of the FOID card, not a fan, but there are some practical applications that we can glean from even in poor policy, such as a FOID card.
Okay. Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Gilly with me. He's kind of an account executive with Delta Defense, service provider for the USCCA, which is Concealed Carry Association. And next thing I want to ask you, Gilly, is what's your thoughts on stun guns, tasers? Do you have a FOID card to carry those? What's the deal on those?
Yeah, so a lot of those you do need a FOID card to purchase in the state of Illinois. I'm an instructor. I've been an instructor for a long time, both law enforcement and civilian. And my personal experience from the training I've received in those is there's a time and place for lots of having opportunities. If somebody feels more comfortable with a stun gun for some reason or a taser, that's on them. There's drawbacks to a stun gun. You got to get really close to somebody. I'm not a huge fan of that. The tasers that shoot out a little bit projectile wise, I'm a bigger fan, or they have these bursts of guns that shoot like pepper balls out and stuff. But the failure rate on those is super, super high. So I always want to caution people. If I can go buy a guitar, Chris, that doesn't make me a guitar player. That makes me a guitar owner.
Yes.
And so regardless what you choose to do, again, in America, the Second Amendment gives you the right to defend yourself how you see fit within reason and expectations. If you don't practice that, if you don't have a plan, the other aspect is just purely financial. I mean, these bursts of guns, I mean, they're pretty costly. I don't know that I can afford one in my budget without making a plan and saving some money. I know I can afford a firearm that's more dependable and more accurate, assuming that I train and practice with it, for about half the cost of some of these bursts of guns. So if it's got a high inefficiency rate and it takes just as much practice and sometimes it's double the cost, personally, for me in my house, I'm going to say we're probably going to stick more on the aspect of guns. Now, we have quite a few people that work places they can't have a gun legally or by policy or stuff like that. So I'm not going to sit there and badmouth or say this is the worst idea ever. We're in America. You have to make the decision that's best for you and best for your family and the people you're responsible for. I would say that if you're going to go down that road, the training, the implementation, the amount of time and effort it takes is just as much, if not more, for a firearm. So again, don't just buy one, have it, and think that, oh, I'm good.
Yeah, right. So you got to do it anyway. You might as well be able to do both.
Correct. Probably. For my law enforcement training, when I went to taser training, the first thing they tell you is, first and foremost, never use this without having a lethal force option. So usually that means, ideally, you want to have two people, one on the taser, one on a firearm. And the reason they tell you that is, the second reason being, is they have a high failure rate. And so if they're companies themselves that are doing this training, you know, just the taser themselves that law enforcement officers carry, like, you have to get both prongs on for them to work. That's pretty tough.
Yeah. As far as that being concealed, having concealed carry license, carrying a gun, and if a person has to use their gun for whatever reason, you know, to defend themselves, defend their families, what are some of the liabilities that you need to be aware of if you have to use your gun?
First and foremost is just dealing with the aftermath in general. Who's going to call 911? What are they going to say? Because everything you say can and will be used against you. But if somebody doesn't notify the cops, then it looks like you're running away from something. So there's the balance of just having the plan for the aftermath in and of itself.
Yeah, plan on what you're going to do if you ever have to do it.
Correct. And then, you know, what attorneys are going to use? I mean, are you going to be stuck with the public defender, or are you going to use the attorney that you want? Or, you know, I run into people all the time, oh, my cousin's an attorney. Okay, what do they practice? Well, they're a divorce attorney. Well, I'm not going to the dentist when my heart hurts, you know? Finding that specialized attorney that can handle that criminal aspect, because even if you do everything right, all of those reports, all those testimonies, all those findings, those are the first things they're going to use as evidence in the civil case.
Well, and we've heard many, many cases over the years that happening, you know, through the media, you know, things go south on somebody that thought they're perfectly in the clear, but it gets turned around. So you have to be, you got to have a, like you say, you got to have a plan. And even as a homeowner, you know, somebody breaks into your house, you know, you need to have a plan, because you could get prosecuted for, you know, shooting somebody that's actually in your house breaking in.
Well, it goes to two things. A lot of people don't even realize, the moment I say, hey, I actually did this on purpose, my homeowner's insurance is null and void. It's a willful act. And so every homeowner's insurance I've ever seen that I've had, that I've possessed, that I've looked at, the moment I say this was intentional or willful, homeowner's insurance is for accidents and neglect.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's that exclusion there. Second of which is, what's the plan next? Like, how do I fill in the gap of paying for that attorney? How do I fill in the gap of replacing my couch or even calling, you know, a necessity to get a mess cleaned up kind of deal?
Yeah. So in your job, one of the things that you do, you actually sell insurance that could protect gun owners. Like, you should.
So I encourage people.
Tell me about what your product is.
So I encourage people to join the USCCA, the United States Concealed Carry Association. And the USCCA has been around almost 21 years. It'll be 21 years in October. Has well over 830,000 members, has had thousands of cases and millions of dollars to help out members. And it's a training organization that every member gets self-defense liability insurance. Every member is listed as an additional insured on the self-defense liability insurance product.
So you sell the membership. Yeah. And once you have the membership, then you're covered if anything goes south.
Every member has access to those membership benefits of the SDLI, yes.
I see.
And so acts of self-defense, whether they include a firearm or not, there's plans in place. And it's not just the lawyer stuff. That's all included. But it's the training and how to set up how to deal with the aftermath is the way we phrase it.
Yeah. You know, you hit a good point there, whether a firearm is included or not. Because, you know, if you're out somewhere and you get in a fight with somebody, for whatever, I guess it doesn't happen as much anymore, but, you know, people are a lot more cautious because of lawsuits, et cetera. But it does happen. And if it did happen, you could be in for some heavy lawsuits.
Yeah, as long as you're not the aggressor and you're the person defending yourself or somebody else, the innocent party, then you would have access to that membership benefit. And it doesn't have to include a firearm, whether it's a vehicle, whether it's, you know, like you said, fisticuffs, whether it's a firearm, up to and including a firearm. It's just for people acting reasonably in self-defense, to be able to have a plan and to be able to have help. And it makes perfect sense in today's society. You know, some of my best clients, honestly, are nurses and teachers and people who are dealing with the general public all the time. And many of them don't even have their concealed carry license or their FOID card, but they see the training aspect of having a home defense plan, having a safety plan at work, being able to defend themselves.
Hey, we don't have a lot of time left, but give me some ABCs on a plan, just a basic plan.
Yeah, it starts with just trusting yourself. So making sure that in your house or places you're at, a lot of times knowing when and where to get out. Just because you don't have to leave a place legally, like Castle Doctrine, doesn't mean it's the smartest thing to do. I'm not telling people not to follow the law. I'm just telling people what's worth the risk. And so my plan is that somebody's going to call 911, tell them get an ambulance and police here. Preferably won't be me. I'm going to be on the phone getting my attorneys on the way and getting there. And then when the cops get there, I'm just going to say, Mr. Officer, Mrs. Officer, I want to be 100% compliant with you, but first I need my attorney present. And there's nothing wrong with saying that, because the Constitution gives us the right against self-incrimination. The Constitution gives us the right to remain silent. And the Constitution gives us the right to have an attorney present. And so you're not doing anything other than following the Constitution and the rules that we've already agreed to play by.
So basically that's the basic plan then.
Yeah, I'm going to get my attorney there to speak and articulate on my behalf. I'm going to talk to my attorney to be able to say what I'm trying to say, because, I mean, this is the most stressful day of my life. I mean, I've got adrenaline running through. I mean, I might have had to take somebody's life or, you know, injure them to defend myself or my wife or my kid or even just somebody I just saw being attacked. I mean.
So also, you know, if we go back to the phone call, 911, what kind of info, what should a person say? Well, okay, they get on the phone, they get 911, and they go, okay, you know,
yeah,
what's going on? What do you tell them?
Less is always more. So my go-to phrase that we teach is, I was attacked, feared for my life, and I had to defend myself. Please send police and ambulance to this location.
Period.
Period. Tell them the location, get off. But ideally, again, this goes to continued training. So even though I'm an instructor, I've been doing this a long time, been a USCCA member for well over the 2 years that I've worked for Delta, you know, we're in the process of, as instructors in this area, going, hey, maybe if there's somebody else. So for my wife's usually with me, maybe it's better that my wife makes that phone call, because I might be crying. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
I've gone from pure, like, you know, emotion of having to defend myself to now it's over. And then in that civil case, you can hear me crying on the phone. They might be able to use that against me. And that's where the civil aspect really scares me, Chris, because on the criminal side, it's proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
But on that civil side, it's a preponderance of the evidence. It's more than 50%.
Yeah.
That's scary, especially when, you know, most of the people in the jury are not going to attend the class like you or I have or I teach. So, you know, I always want to take that into consideration, like we were talking, the lowest common denominator of communication.
Okay. Now, let's say a listener's out there that are listening to this and they, like, want more information. Yeah. Are they, you know, like, maybe they want to be a member. Okay. Yeah. So, can you give us the info?
Yeah. So, USCCA.com is a great website. I can give you my office number. My office number is 618-570-4942. That's 618-570-4942. You can go to the website and look for a class near you. Many of our partners, again, Trigger Talent, he has those classes listed, and they give you all the info. You know, feel free to reach out to my office. We're happy to answer questions. Ideally, what I like to tell people is if you're thinking about getting your concealed carry license,
yeah,
go ahead and get the training and then make decisions based upon that after you've already applied, because just because you have the license does not mean that you have to carry. Right. But without that concealed carry license, you can't legally carry where you might need to or want to.
Yep. Well, Gilly, thanks for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
And best of luck to you out there.
Thanks. Appreciate you having the invite.